Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The promise of new technologies for the classroom. It might be oversold. Maybe you saw the front page article in the New York Times over the weekend that reported that educational technology companies are sometimes misleading the public about whether their products actually produce positive results. But it's also possible that the metrics being used are off, or the teachers and school districts aren't integrating these new technologies in the right ways. Trip Gabriel, who co-wrote the article with Matt Richtel, joins us now to discuss. Trip, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, happy to be here.
And listeners, you can read the article on our show page at WNYC.org or go to schoolbook.org, the new collaboration between the New York Times and WNYC. So, Trip, what kind of e-learning products are we talking about, and how many students are actually using these technologies in the United States?
Brian, I have to plead ignorance about the number of students that are using them. We're talking about classroom software that's used to supplement instruction. These are not fully online courses that some people may be familiar with. These are software programs that are integrated into the regular classroom, and they're usually geared toward core subjects like reading and math from the elementary level up to about 9th or 10th grade mathematics. I can't tell you exactly how many students across the country use them. It's estimated to be about a $2.2 billion market, so that's a pretty good size
and
number.
The example you focus on in the article mostly is Cognitive Tutor, which is a product of Carnegie Learning. They promise, quote, revolutionary results. What is that technology?
It's a algebra program. It was developed by scientists at Carnegie Mellon University. The idea is that students sitting in front of a computer are tutored in algebra concepts. Work out a problem on the screen. You type in an answer. If the answer is correct, and you do that successively, the software will pass you on to the next the more difficult problem. If you don't do it correctly, then the software claims it can analyze where your weaknesses are, and it will continue to drill you in those areas until you develop proficiency.
Are they fulfilling their promise of revolutionary results?
Well, not according to independent analysis looked at by the United States Department of Education. Cognitive Tutor is one of the oldest or the most venerable math tutoring software programs on the market. It's been around for more than a decade. It's been the subject of all kinds of education research. The U.S. Department of Education took a look at that research and issued a report last year, and the bottom line conclusion was that Cognitive Tutor was found to have no discernible effects on math achievement.
So do the school districts realize that, and are they firing Cognitive Tutor, or is it too late once they buy it?
There doesn't seem to be much of a slowdown in demand for Cognitive Tutor. The company was sold this year. It looks like it's doing pretty well. What we learned in our reporting is that a lot of educators, school officials who are in charge of buying this stuff, don't take a very careful look at the research.
Listeners, any students, teachers, school administrators out there who have used technologies in the classroom or struggled with how much technology to invest in for your classroom, 212-433-WNYC, or parents, how do you feel about technology, these kinds of learning programs or anything else technological in the classroom? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post it to our show page, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show. And I guess, Trip, it seems that there are two issues here. One, the districts aren't bothering to consult the research and are taking the product company's word for how good the product is. And two, that the research about the efficacy of these products is potentially flawed or at least incomplete. Yes?
Well, I think, to address the latter, the companies will push back at the research. I think the question then to ask the companies is, okay, if you don't buy the research that the Federal Education Department embraces, what is the alternative? How are you measuring effectiveness of your product? If you certainly shrug your shoulders and say that, well, teachers and principals can tell what works for them, you're sort of dodging the issue.
Here's a comment from our webpage. Janice writes, as a teacher, I am concerned about the use of technology in the classroom. In some instances, it can be beneficial. In most instances, it is only used because it sounds good to say we do. In fact, oftentimes the technology detracts from teaching and learning because people get distracted by the bells and whistles. Yes, we need to engage students in active learning. However, we need to remember that as educators, it is our job to maintain a high bar and help students reach it, not teach to the lowest common denominator. I want my students to be engaged, but I am not here to entertain them. Too often, technology is used in the classroom to keep students from being bored rather than because it does something specific that aids student learning. So that's one comment from a teacher on our webpage. And I want to go from that to Alicia calling from North Vale. Alicia, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a former classroom teacher, and now I'm one of the trainers that an independent contractor who goes in to train teachers how to effectively integrate technology into the classroom. And I think what's missing here is we're talking about the product, but we're not talking about the importance of making sure that teachers are well prepared in terms of how to use it. Just like anything else, you can't throw someone a tool and not instruct them how to effectively make it work. And I'm not necessarily familiar with the product that you just spoke about. However, that has been the bottom line that a lot of teachers have felt, that the school purchases millions of dollars on technologies, but the school is not willing to train the teachers how to use it effectively to make sure that it's engaging, not entertainment, and that it's used as a tool, not to replace effective learning in the classroom.
So how do you square that? If Janice, the other teacher who wrote in, is having that experience in the classroom of it being entertainment, of it replacing the high bar of the give and take between human beings, if the teacher is really good, how do you train the teacher? How do you make sure that it's used in the right way and not the wrong way?
Well, number one, that's where people, I mean, not to, you know, self-gloat or anything, but that's where people such as myself and other colleagues that I work with literally around the country, that's where we come in, where we are all former classroom teachers who learned how to effectively use technology in the classroom, because it's a matter of perspective. When someone comes in who's been in their shoes, comes in and says, look, I can show you how to make this engaging, to do what you normally do as a teacher, what you learned how to do as a teacher. But now just to add this in as a tool, then it changes perspective. You know, the young lady who wrote on that webpage, on your webpage, is not going to change perspectives until someone like herself, who's been in her shoes, mm-hmm. comes in to help show her how things can be a lot different. I understand where she's coming from, but it has to do with her experience.
Alicia, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. Good luck in doing that job. And Laura in New Hyde Park, a parent calling in. Hi, Laura. You're on WNYC.
Hi. I've seen technology and math work for my son. He's gone from a 55 to an 80 and passed his regions in algebra. And it's the right tool, the right technology is needed and the right training, too, for the teachers. But, I mean, I've seen, particularly with math, I definitely had an aha moment that math is a visual thing. And I think you do need the teacher and you do need the technology to help the kids that have the difficulty of tracking with math. Who is the young, I can't think of the gentleman who did, he was on Channel 13, who did for his niece or nephew how to do different math, and he boomed. He's had so many hits uh-huh. to his site related to that. I can't think of the...
I'm not coming up with it either. But why do you think the technology worked for your child when human beings couldn't?
because he has a visual tracking problem. And what he can't go down vertically well, and when you're going from a book or, you know, different things up and down from your paper and stuff, when you're on the computer itself, you're looking straight ahead. So it helps the eye and the visual to track down. I mean, I just see it working much better for him. I think you've also had on your shows on NPR tutorial use for colleges. I think it was for community college. How uh-huh. It was something like the school. My son used the Castle Learning in School Island, and it was similar. The gentleman had spoke about how it's like he used it for tests. The instructor, I
think. Yeah, interesting. And Laura, I'm going to leave it there, but that's an important story, especially for somebody with some kind of a disability or a learning handicap. As we talk with Tripp Gabriel from the New York Times, who did an investigative report on technology companies' claims about their e-learning products for schools compared to the actual results. And Tripp, you know, we've heard three interesting perspectives now from the teacher, the former teacher who's doing software training for other teachers, and this parent who says it worked for her kid who had a particular issue.
I don't think anyone would argue that, you know, all software, all education classroom technology is a bust. You can learn algebra in all kinds of ways. I mean, I tried to learn algebra on these programs, too, and it's been a long time since I've been in high school. And, you know, even I was able to learn a little bit of algebra, you know, following the cognitive tutor program. I think what's at stake here is not individual examples of a student who did well or how a teacher's implementing a product. It's, you know, when you look collectively at the best research about whether these programs are effective compared to, it's always compared to traditional curriculum, textbook learning, or any other format that a control classroom is using. Is it a better product scientifically? Can it be demonstrated that it makes a difference? And the evidence is very, very weak for most classroom software when measured in, you know, when held to a very high standard of scientific evidence.
So we just had a parent telling of a positive experience that her child had with math technology. Mary in Manhattan, I think, has a more negative story. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I mean, it's not negative. I mean, I think technology is incredible when it's used properly. But there's something new. I have a middle schooler in Brooklyn, and there's something called Pupil Path where he can check his grades and his attendance and everything on a daily basis. So if he's not getting, you know, 100 or getting high marks in a class, he's, you know, he gets upset. And there's a negative and a positive side to that, too, to make him work harder. But, you know, I think, you know, there's just a gray area as to how much information a child needs to know. You know, this isn't about learning software or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's about tracking and grades.
Right.
But as a baby boomer, and I'm about to turn 50 this year, I mean, I just think sometimes it's just TMI, too much information. You know, we also had a situation where a teacher wrote an email home to the parents because they had a, you know, there was a bad day in class, and everybody, you know, gets in an uproar, and all the parents email each other, and it just becomes, you know, this is just about technology, but I just think it's sometimes being used in the wrong direction.
Yes.
Even though there's tremendous, I think, ways it can be used positively.
I hear what you say. Mary, thank you. And, you know, in August, the New York State Comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, who was just on the show last hour, rejected a no-bid contract worth $27 million between the New York State Education Department and an education technology company owned by Rupert Murdoch called Wireless Generation. And I asked DiNapoli about it today. Here's what he said.
We certainly had concerns given some of the revelations about News Corp and this technology was going to be used for teacher evaluations, something that, you know, is very important and needs to be discreet and secure. And you know, the fact that it was a no-bid, you know, really continued to heighten the, you know, the concerns here. So State Education Department, we'll see what they come back with. From my point of view, having a more competitive process and having more time for some of the revelations to play themselves out, I think would be a more prudent approach in terms of dealing with that contract.
Comptroller DiNapoli on our show last hour. And Tripp Gabriel, the teachers union, urged DiNapoli to block this contract. And as he said there, the contract was for teacher evaluation. Do you think teachers are opposed to these kinds of evaluation technologies to protect themselves? Do you think teachers or the union are opposed to new teaching technologies more broadly because they think it might replace some of them? Or how would you contextualize that?
I think many teachers' unions are opposed to increased the use of technology in the classroom for what the reason you suggested, that and in fact they're not wrong in identifying or suspecting that that the companies and the administrators that are pushing classroom technology are interested in economizing on the expenses of instruction. I mean, I think there's been a lot of examples out there. The wireless generation contract, which is a whole other matter. It goes to teacher evaluations and using, and that's a very controversial area right now about how to measure, a good teaching. And I think it's more of a measurement. It's more of a measurement programming that the wireless generation is offering. So I'm not familiar with the union's role in opposing that. But there's a tremendous momentum from lots of sources pushing education into schools. You got a huge technology industry that's behind it. You've got a lot of education officials and think tank policy type people who feel just instinctively that it's the way of the future. And we all love technology. It's very hard to, be a technophobe and say, I don't want it. But there is a developing core body of research evidence about how effective it is in helping students learn, and some of those and some of that evidence is flashing yellow. Caution.
Do teachers stand to be replaced by machines? I mean, there are some. There are. I think it's very different when, say, Anya Kamenetz comes on and talks about her whole e-learning thing, which is to help students avoid the high cost of tuition at the college level and do, e-learning programs as kind of DIY college education. Yet at the same time, those courses do not involve the same bodies at the college level in terms of faculty, that a normal college education does. Are we talking about the same kinds of things, K-8 or K-12, where these might be used as cost-saving measures to save on personnel?
Yes, I think they're related types of things. I don't think they were probably initially sold that way or developed that way, but I think that's, in the economic climate that we've been in, particularly in the last few years, schools are seizing upon this. And we're talking about here about classroom software, but there's been quite a rise in fully online courses packaged for K-12 learning, the equivalent of the University of Phoenix higher education that people are familiar with. And that's a growing area, and there's no question that it's being promoted as a cost-saving measure. I mean, sure. Whether that's a bad thing or a good thing,
yes.
you can choose your own side on that.
And that's what people will have to do. And you can read the whole article by Tripp Gabriel from the New York Times that investigated the e-software industry and some of the claims that they're making, e-software, e-learning industry, and some of the claims that they're making for some of those educational software products on our WNYC New York Times Education Issues website called schoolbook.org. Tripp, thanks a lot.
Good to talk to you, Ryan.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, still to come this hour, how Latino conservatives might watch tonight's Republican debate, and James Rodé and Dule Hill, stars of the TV show Psych. Stay with us.